I kneel down to Janine's crumpled form and turn her over. She blinks up at me, still breathing. "Hey," I say, emotion warping my voice. "Hey," she responds, with a weak smile. "Good to see you." I open up her shirt over her right shoulder, and she winces. The bite is a nasty gash, and the flesh there is shredded. But she'll live. While war between man and beast rages all around us, I try to find calm to repair the damage. I put my hands on Janine's bloodied shoulder and wait for the power to surge through me. But my magic is only a flicker, the healing energy totally drained. I drape Janine's arm around my neck and look around wildly for help, but most of the resistance fighters are still engaged in to-the-death combat, and those who have managed to kill a soul sucker or escape are far too weak now to help channel my power. Things are getting desperate. We really are in hell.
Chapter 67. The streets are eerily quiet and free of guards as Byron and I sprint away from the palace. It's looking like a clean getaway, which is just about the only lucky thing that's happened to me in the last year. It's still dark, but the street kids are already out en masse, their plastic garbage bags slung over their shoulders as they pick through the streets for anything left by the careless rich. The competition is cutthroat, and once they realize we don't have a bean between us, they don't pay us any mind. A black dog noses around in the garbage in the dim light of the alley, and my heart aches for Pfeffer. The dog's ragged ears prick up at the distant howl of a pack of NO hunting wolves, and his tail goes between his legs. We're barely out of the range of the wolves and searchlights before Byron is wheezing like an asthmatic 80-year-old smoker after a workout. I notice my own exhaustion for the first time. It's either keep going or collapse at this point. "Do you have any idea where we're headed anyway?" I ask. I probably would have preferred to ditch the weasel if I wasn't totally turned around in this maze of NO concrete. Without him, I'm sure I'd end up stumbling right back through the palace compound gates. Byron coughs, hands on his knees. "Of course I know where we're going," he says indignantly. "There's a portal I know of, a top-secret, intensely complicated gateway that few of the most elite NOPE members even know about. It leads to the darkest, most terrifying part of the Shadowland." Byron looks at me gravely. Sure, going to the Shadowland always involves a certain amount of risk and trepidation, but the guy can be so dramatic. "And your intel says that's where Wit's hanging out?" "Well, the information is less specific than we'd hoped for." Byron code for, "No, I'm taking a wild guess here and hope I'm right." "But there's evidence to suggest that Wit is highly sought after by the dead, and one can assume that he would be drawn to the more remote areas in his quest to locate your parents," he reports. "Headed for the worst place at the worst possible time? Yeah, that sounds like my brother." I try to smile, but Byron's probably right, actually. A tightness closes around my heart. Please let Wit be okay. Byron sighs. "And we're on a deadline. The report said the end is near, whatever that means, so we need to find Wit as soon as possible." I nod. The end has felt near for a very long time. "And Wist, there's another thing I suspect you're not going to be rather ecstatic about." "Another thing? As in, worse than the end is near?" I cock an eyebrow and Byron hesitates. "What? Just say it." "The portal is not exactly easy to get through, because it's underwater." "Underwater?" My hands start to sweat, and my throat goes dry remembering the claustrophobic nightmare of being flushed through the sewer, in fish form, not so very long ago. "Great, I'm sure this will be a thrill a minute." "If I can handle the one, I think I can manage a little aqua," I say mildly, but I feel a chill at his words. "The sun's starting to come up. Can we just get going already?" We run for a few more blocks through the rubble of the streets, the cement buildings towering around us like vultures closing in. Byron signals left, and when we turn, a river is just up ahead of us, bisecting the city of progress. Dawn breaks over the water as we approach, and the pink glow makes our ravaged capital look almost beautiful. If I didn't expect to be shot at any second, if I were a normal girl in normal circumstances, I'd sit right down on this curb and watch as the sun edged up over the horizon. The portal, Byron nods at the river, snapping me back to reality. I'm not a normal girl after all. Not anymore. I want to immediately take off toward the portal and find my brother, but something makes me hesitate, something more than just paranoia about the water. There's an uncomfortable eeriness that I can't pinpoint. There are no people out anymore, and the bean-picker children have disappeared completely. No birds, no wind, and the river is barely stirring. The air is still. Too still. B, does something feel off to you? He eyes the clouds looming above us, unmoving, jaundiced yellow and pregnant with threat. Yeah, you could say that. A strong wind is already picking back up, and the sky is going dark in a hurry. Byron grabs my hand and we dash forward toward the portal, but the once calm streets turn swiftly into a nightmare of flying debris, and the river's waves become crashing, deadly rapids. It's like a hurricane spinning into a tornado. Amid the chaos, waves of soldiers start to pour in from the side streets with the wind at their backs. I freeze. It's not possible. Pierce, racing at the helm, his strong jaw set with determination, his fair, wavy hair trailing behind him in the violent wind. And worse, the one by his side, his face wild with power, lust, and something else. Fury. How have they healed so quickly? I left them both weak and wounded. But now Pierce and the One take command of the swirling skies. A mega power looms large above us, and nothing has ever felt stronger, including my fear. Byron is tugging on my arm, shielding his eyes from the wreckage, but I just stand there, mouth gaping, utterly overwhelmed. The wind whips my long hair and rain batters my face, but I can't seem to move an inch. Both the One's and Pierce's eyes are burning white hot, united with a particular undisguised hatred for the Fire Girl, the one with the gift. The girl who tried to kill them and might have succeeded. The girl who will pay dearly for her sins. A mass of dread forms in my stomach, and my body is shaking all over. This is surely my worst nightmare come for me at last.
Chapter 68. The sharp, metallic scent of blood hangs in the air, and the hill is crowded with human and animal bodies. I spot Reagan, picking over the injured, desperation on his face. He looks okay, but as he kneels next to a silent, unmoving form, gathering it up into his arms, I know we haven't made it through without any losses. The smallest of Reagan's two charges is next to him, crying. Celia joins them and wraps her arms around the boy, rocking him as he weeps for his brother. I feel something harden inside me, and tears don't come. I've seen it all before. Orphaned, trusting kids, hacked out of existence while trying to find their way home. I think of Pearl Marie's voice as she talked about Ziggy, and guilt lodges in my gut like a stone. What was I doing making promises to that kid? Janine looks at Reagan and then turns her face against my chest, shutting out the scene. Her arms hang limply at her side, red blooming through her shirt. Holding her here on this eerily lush green hillside surrounded by the macabre reality, I feel like a character on a page ripped from a book, where there's no time and no ending, no way to move forward. I look over Janine's head into the valley below, seeing the ghostly beings moving around down there, watching us. Expecting what? Then, just beyond the ambling dead, where the red haze has dissipated the tiniest bit, something sparkles. I put a hand up to shield my eyes, squinting, and I think I can make out a thin gray line, moving, reflecting the light. The river, I mouth, realization dawning on me. The very same river from the vision at Mrs. Highsmith's apartment, the one where I saw my parents. I motion to the others, pointing. I know we should be celebrating. We finally made it. But when Reagan looks over at me, his eyes swollen and his face bitter, I can only think, at what cost? Celia comes up behind us. She puts her hand on my back and rests her head on my shoulder. You think my mom and dad are down there, Celia? I ask, squinting at the crowd. She smiles sadly, still shaken. I don't know for sure, but I'll help you look. Come on. Celia takes my hand, and Janine's as well. She turns to the others, scattered on the hillside. Sasha and Emmett nod and start across the uneven ground toward us, shoulders heavy. But most of the kids aren't budging. I know it's hard, and I know you're all hurting, but we can't stop now, I call. Another battle? Sasha says, limping over. Haven't we been through enough? No offense, but I'm sick of being dragged along and almost killed for your sake. I just want to get us all out of here. Some of the other kids nod in agreement, but Janine speaks up. Wit is one of us, she says sharply, cradling her arm. We're fighting for him, but we're fighting for the resistance too. Have you forgotten why we ended up here in the first place? There's no safe haven in the overworld until we face the battles in the underworld. Would you rather just give up now, after coming this far? Sasha sighs, the public scolding obviously stinging him a bit. My heart swells with respect for Janine. I know the pain from her shoulder is worse than she's letting on, but she always has a fighting spirit. The rest of the kids reluctantly join the group. The only way out of this nightmare is through it seems. Together, we look toward the thin river of hope calling to us, promising salvation.
Chapter 69.
This will be the end of you, girl, the one howls over the wind, his arms spread out like a maestro directing the scene as he levitates above the violent eye of the storm. I can promise you that much. Are you ready to be nothing but a memory? And then not even that?
Pierce has instructed the troops to block all exit routes, and he strides toward me along the bank, pretentiously flanked on either side by elite NO guards, the whites of his wicked eyes flashing furiously at me.
I think so, I whisper numbly. Maybe I am ready to be done with all of this.
The clouds race across the heavens faster, and the massive whirling twister towers above me. Just a slight girl battling the whole sky.
I open my arms, palms up, a lamb offered for the slaughter, and a deafening clap of thunder bellows its response. I concentrate on the last sensations I will possibly ever experience, feel the hard rain tearing across my face, and sense the cold wind on my eyelids, my tangled hair whipped in the raging gale. I hear the roar of the storm as it grows in strength, but my ears strain to hear something else as well. Byron! I'd forgotten him!
Wisty! Come right now! You can get away! He bellows.
I snap open my eyes to see a spectacular flash of lightning strike nearby, and in a magical dance of luck, timing, and sheer adrenaline, I'm able to instantaneously send all my electrical energy into manipulating it. Debris swirls around us as I hurl the supercharge at the One and his soldiers. The flashing crackle flies from my fingers and finds its target. The river, with the New Order troops, all wading through the shallow water. The connection lights up the sky, and for a moment hundreds of men convulse like marionettes as electricity shoots through their bodies. I feel nauseous. Those were men with families, with hopes. But they were also men who'd done unspeakable things, I remind myself, who'd performed experiments on children and executed their parents. But is there ever an excuse for mass murder? I glimpse the One's face, distorted with anger and, what else? Admiration? and I hear Pierce's enraged yelling behind him. But then I turn away from them toward the turbulent river, toward the Shadowland, and my parents. Now is the moment when terror finally grips my heart, but there's no time to think of drowning, to imagine my lungs exploding. Instead, I inhale a giant gulp of air, and Byron grabs my hand as we plunge into the deep, swirling frenzy of water. I kick my feet fiercely and don't stop until we push through a portal and deep into the Shadowland.
Chapter 70. The River of Forever is not the serene, clear blue comfort that you'd hope to greet your soul after you've exhaled your last breath in the overworld. Instead, it's a gray mass of angry, roiling waves, ominous and forbidding, surrounded by the anarchy of the dead. But it's as if the water has a magnetic pull, too. I stumble toward it as if hypnotized. As I near, I can see an ancient-looking drawbridge firmly locked in a raised position. Who knows how long it's been that way? There's a mass of accumulated souls throwing themselves into those furious waters, but they can't cross. Instead, the river rolls them violently about, tossing them like limp fish back onto the bank. I feel an overwhelming need to jump, too, along with a vague panic at the thought of not being able to control that urge. Celia puts her hand on my arm, shaking her head in warning. Sasha has taken Reagan and some of the others to rest away from the crowds, but a few of us, including Janine and Celia, have started elbowing through the masses along the bank, trying to find the spot on the river where I remember seeing my parents, in the vision at Mrs. Highsmith's. It's chaotic, with lines snaking back and forth, and mobs of the newly dead wandering aimlessly through this antechamber of the afterlife. And no one seems to be able to help us. Some people are weeping, but most are dazed and in shock, nearly unresponsive. "They don't get that they're dead," Celia explains, nodding at a group of older people huddled together near us, confused and terrified. "They're not like the half-lights, not like me. They don't have unfinished business." She smiles sadly. "But until they cross the River of Forever, a lot of them just don't understand what's going on." "And is it always like this? I can't believe that this frenzied mass of people is always so immense and confused. This can't be how it's supposed to go." Celia's brow creases. "I don't know, Whit. You expect me to know everything about this place, and I just don't." I'm momentarily stunned by her anger. Celia never snaps, at me or anyone. I try to squeeze her hand, wanting reassurance that it's fine. We are fine. I forgot I wouldn't be able to feel it. It's like grasping at air. It seems like now that we're physically the closest we've been since she disappeared from the overworld, strangely, she feels farthest away. How can we truly understand each other when we've had such intense experiences on our own? She sighs. "I'm sorry, okay? It's just that I've been trying to get across that river just like everyone else for as long as I've been here. You can feel it pulling, can't you?" I nod. It's an effort to keep myself on solid ground. "I feel that pull every second, all the time." "I'm sorry," I say quietly. "It must be hard." She presses her lips together and looks out at the gray waves. "I don't think this is the way it's supposed to be, but this is all I know. Some of the other half-lights have heard rumors that the One's power has leaked into the Shadowland, and it's just screwing with everything. But we're all guessing. The only thing I know for sure is that until balance is restored, we're stuck on this side, and the dead just keep coming." "Maybe that means that it's not final then," Janine suggests. "That the dead aren't really dead yet." "But they are," Celia says testily. "Just look at them." I peer at the bewildered faces of those around us. In their frightened, yearning eyes, the spark has unmistakably been extinguished. There is no light here, no life. Which means that if my parents are here, they really are just like these people. Dead. The thought takes my breath away, and the ground whirls under me. I sit down abruptly, head in my hands. "Whit!" Celia crouches next to me, alarmed. She probably wants to see me as the guy I used to be, too. This big-shot quarterback, invulnerable and easygoing. But I can't be that guy for her right now. Not anymore. Not in this world. I search her face, my head swimming. I never believed it. I always held out the hope that they'd be alive somewhere, somehow. But if my parents are here, then they're... Celia nods, rubbing my back, though I can't feel it. Then they're like me. I stand up. Whatever the outcome, whatever the state of my parents, I've come this far, and I have to find them. I look around at the mob, eager for a familiar face. And I see one, but not the one I expect. He's a bit younger than I am, slightly built, with bushy dark hair standing out from his head in all directions. Half of his face is missing. Daniel Anderson. I knew him in high school. He was in Wistie's class, I think. I went to his funeral. The whole school was there, the girls all sobbing, the guys stone-faced, but some of them crying a little too. His girlfriend, a pinch-faced sophomore cheerleader, a girl Celia never got along with, talked about how much he liked video games in his car. As she said it, his mother got hysterical. It was the car that killed him. He was the first person I ever really knew who'd died. They called it a tragedy. That was before the New Order, before any of us understood what tragedy was. Daniel, I put my hand on his shoulder, and he whirls around, jumpy, scared. I don't understand, he murmurs. Is it time? He asks, and I try not to stare at the crater in the left side of his head. His eyes widen as if he's seen the future in my face. He's looking at me like the lost ones did, with desperation and crushing hope. Save me, he pleads. Please! I back away from him, suddenly on my guard, but his cavernous eyes follow me, expectant. I will, I say, though I have no idea how. I promise I'll do whatever I can. Then Janine whispers in a very small voice. Save me too, Whit. She's leaning heavily on Emmett now, and I can see how shallow her breathing is. The blood has soaked her shirt a sticky dark brown. Her face is almost translucent, and a cold sweat stands out on her brow. I nod solemnly. I don't know how I'll manage it, but I need to save her more than anything.
Chapter 71. It's so dark in this part of the Shadowland that Byron and I can't see a thing in front of us. We have no idea where we are, where we're going, or where my brother is. We're picking our way over uneven, rocky ground, and I can just barely make out the reaching branches of a pocket of trees up ahead. There's magic over there. I can feel it. Like some kind of cocktail of dark energy pulling my own M toward it. I stray from the path to take the quickest way possible toward those alluring trees and immediately slam my shin into a boulder in the darkness.
Wistie, watch out! Careful! Byron urges.
Why the heck do people always tell you to watch out after you're already hurt? The gash is wet with blood, and I bite my lip, stifling a cry, and Byron holds my hand in support. After a minute, the pain ebbs, and I stand up, ready to set out again. Even though I'm kind of disturbed that Byron is still holding my hand in his clammy grip, I'm too scared to let go. At least we're safe here, I say, trying to look on the bright side.
Safe? Byron repeats.
You neglect to account for flesh-eating lost ones and spirit suckers? Not to mention the danger of getting trapped in this maze forever and eventually running out of strength and oxygen.
I can always count on Byron for a healthy dose of optimism.
Relatively safe, I mean. Safe from Pierce and the One. They're straight and narrows, right? So we don't have to deal with them in the Shadowland, at least. Byron conspicuously doesn't answer. My skin is still wet from the river, and my dripping hair makes it feel like I'm crawling with 1,000 roaches, their little legs scurrying up my arms and down my neck. And now Byron's got me thinking about lost ones. After 10 minutes of stumbling along in the pitch blackness, paranoid, I've had about enough of the creepy quiet and dark.
All right, Byron, say something annoying. I've lost count of the times when I flamed out in a Byron-induced rage.
What? Wisty, after all we've been through, I resent that you would imply...
Just kidding. I've got it pretty much down to a science at this point. Stand back.
As he lets go of my hand, I release a spark, and suddenly I'm covered in the familiar glow, flames licking out from my body. I love the feeling of being a human torch.
Whoa, Byron breathes, and I still feel a bit of pride at the awe in his voice.
That seriously never gets old.
I lead the way down a path full of potholes, along craggy cliffs. Insects crunch and slither beneath our feet, and I shudder. Was it really my wet hair that I felt crawling on me?
Where are we going, anyway? Byron asks after a few minutes.
I don't know. To the end, I guess. Didn't you say that the end is near? I think you might be right, Bee.
I mean it as a joke, but it comes out way more serious, and Byron goes quiet.
I kind of feel sorry for the guy.
True, he has a history of playing both sides and hasn't always been 100% trustworthy, but this particular time it is kind of my fault he's part of the focus of a cross-world manhunt. And he did think he was saving my life back there with Pierce.
I sigh.
Listen, Byron, I meant to tell you... I cough. I'm really bad at this. Sorry for, you know, turning you into a weasel. Even if you did deserve it.
Byron's eyes cloud over. With tears? Okay, I wasn't prepared for that.
Hey now, I mumble uncomfortably. No need to get all emotional. I just wanted to let you know that despite all the bad blood between us in the past, I'm starting to think you're a pretty solid guy. Maybe even a friend.
His lip quivers and I wag a finger in warning.
Not that I'm not prepared to revoke that judgment if the situation calls for it.
He nods vigorously but is still fighting back a sob.
This is totally awkward. I will never let you down again, Wisty. I know I've said some things in the past, but I just think you're amazing. And you don't know what it means to me to hear,
he sniffles,
to have your friendship. I mean, I swear that you can depend on my allegiance and expect the highest level of commitment in the future, and...
I put up a hand.
Okay, got it, Byron. No need to go overboard. Just come here.
I let the flame extinguish for a second and hold my arms out tentatively for a totally platonic, not weird in any way, tiny hug of friendship. Byron practically leaps at me, squeezing me half to death and probably getting snot and tears and God knows what else in my hair.
Still, the whole thing is kind of heartwarming, and I can't help being a bit relieved.
Chapter 72. We the living are bloodied, weak, and struggling to breathe the air in this wretched place. But as we shuffle in a line through the crowds milling along the river, Sasha and Emmett, wounded but defiant, Reagan with his surviving young charge, Janine and I, we positively radiate life against this backdrop of dead. Well, all of us except Celia. We follow her half-light through the sea of spirits to a group of more people I know, or knew. People from our town. People who might be able to help us locate my parents. Have you seen Benjamin and Eliza Allgood? I ask no one in particular, trying to shift their focus. Please, has anyone seen my parents? I ask more forcefully. Wit! Sasha waves me over to a stooped spirit. The man is ancient, with papery skin. He's draped in a flowing black robe. I don't recognize him at first, but without warning, he leans in and gives me a stiff, very cold hug. He smells sour, but there's something else there too. The faint smell of cinnamon. Memories flood back to me as I realize that I know this man too. It's the old minister from the church that our parents used to take us to, when we were little kids, back when religion was legal. We stopped going when Wisty and I were pretty young, but it's him all right. He mumbles something that I can't understand, and I lean in closer, eager for direction. Can you bear it, son? He croaks. Can you bear to witness the truth? Then he points a spindly finger. I hold my breath as I follow it with my eyes, and Celia grips one of my trembling hands, Janine the other. My feet are carrying me forward before my brain even registers the scene. Down the banks of the River of Forever, there is a couple, a man and a woman, working their way through the crowds of people, lining them up, organizing them, comforting them. Mom! Dad! I shout mid-stride. Their heads turn to look at me, an emotion ripped through my chest. It's really them.
Whit?
My mom gasps, her voice part hope, part anguish. I reach her first and swing her into her fierce embrace.
Mom, I thought I'd never...
My voice breaks off. I have to stop talking or I'll lose it. She's so, so thin, emaciated. Her arms encircle me, but I can barely feel her. It's as if I'm being hugged by a ghost. But I can feel her. She has substance, even just a little, and the spark in her eyes burns so, so bright when she looks into mine. A sob catches in my throat, and my whole body shudders as I grip my mother in my arms with every bit of my strength. I'm not sure how long I'm clutching her before I spot a man behind her, whom I hardly recognize. He's aged 100 years and seems shrunken, slight. Dad? I whisper, unbelieving. I untangle myself from Mom's arms and run to meet the man who has always been my rock, my solid ground, the man I thought I'd lost forever. He grips me in a ferocious hug and his arms are stronger than ever, strong and solid. I can feel both of my parents, which means, are they dead or alive? I can't bear to ask that question, so I ask the next best one. I pull away from my dad and look from him to Mom, needing to know. What is this river? And what are you guys doing here? Mom's voice is soft, coaxing, like when she tried to help me with a difficult math problem in my homework when I was a kid. You know what it is, Whit. It's the river to the other side. And what's on the other side? I ask stubbornly. We all find out in our own time, my dad says. Whit, this is the most important time in your and Wistie's lives. The world is in terrible upheaval, and the backup at the river is just a symptom of it. We never dreamed it would happen this way, this quickly. What exactly is happening? I demand. Despite how relieved I am to see my parents, I find myself angry with them too. They should have prepared us better, and they're still feeding me these half-truths. Mom holds my hand as if she never wants to let it go. The one who is the one has raised a bridge across the River of Forever, and chaos has erupted. The natural flow of life, of fate, of the prophecies, has been critically interrupted. Very soon we'll find out if the prophecies will or will not be fulfilled, Dad jumps in. But Wistie is as much a part of it as you are. He puts his hands on my shoulders, his voice pleading. Whit, where is your sister? I have no idea where she is, I say exasperated. Why don't you ask your friend Mrs. Highsmith? She's the one who said Wistie had to deal with the one. She's the one who sent each of us off on our own. But right now it all seems nothing short of insane. I should have never trusted that old lady. I don't even want to think about what could have happened to Wistie. I feel a pang as I get the words out, and instantly regret it when I see my parents' faces sag. I'd been trying to focus on just what was in front of me. The truth is, I'm crazy with worry about my little sister. Mom, Dad, I put a hand on Mom's wrist. She's here, Celia cuts in. I feel it somehow. It's like her light, her fire, is changing the energy of this place. She's in the Shadowland, I'm sure. Dad beams at Celia, but my mom's brow creases. Time is running out, though. Celia looks scared. I know. I'm not sure she'll be able to get here in time. This is exactly what the one wanted, Dad says angrily, realizing the implications. If he gets to Wistie in the Shadowland and gets to her alone, it could be the end of everything. What do you mean, the end of everything? I ask. A look passes between my parents and Celia. What do they know? What's supposed to happen? I press, but they won't meet my eyes. I've had it with the meaningful looks meant for only the all-knowing dead. I've had it with secrecy. I know that my sister is important in all of this, and that she's in an absurd amount of danger, and that's all I really need to know. If she's here, I'll find her. I turn away from all of them and take off at a clip.
Wit!
My father calls after me. I'm going to find her, I call over my shoulder. I've looked out for Wistie my whole life, and I'm not going to stop now.
Chapter 73. Byron and I barrel through the maze-like turns of the Shadowland, desperately trying to make it to Wit and my parents before this so-called end of everything. We're deeper into the Shadowland than I've ever been before, and the lightning sky isn't a comfort when the clouds are blood red and the forest seems carnivorous. The trees, which appear to be made of bone, lurch toward us, whispering things I can't decipher. I stop for a second, ears perked up.
What is it? Byron asks, but I shake my head. I can't explain why, but I feel like I can hear Celia's musical voice echoing through the hollow passage, and I can sense my brother, as if he were here not long ago.
Nothing, I just think we're on the right path. Just then, a bone snaps behind us, and I jump a mile high. Byron lets out a yelp, which doesn't exactly diffuse the tension. A low chuckle erupts at our expense. I whip around to see Pierce, calm and striking, blonde head leaning against a tree, gazing with fascination at his prey. My whole body tenses. I try to block it, but the kiss Pierce forced on me flashes in my mind again. Now just the sight of him evokes both shame and seething rage.
You may indeed have been on the right path to find your family, Miss Allgood.
It's a shame you'll never reach them now, he says almost apologetically. I turn to Byron.
Pierce is a curve, I whisper harshly, jabbing him in the ribs.
Byron grimaces and rubs his temples.
I probably should have told you, but I wasn't sure. He's younger than most of the Enno soldiers and highly perceptive, so I suspected he might be.
Pierce smiles with smug satisfaction. You don't do me justice, Swain. I wasn't just a curve, but a former NOPE officer, no less. Not that it matters anyway, since the one who is the one has now breached the final frontier.
The realization blows my mind.
The one is in the Shadowland? I murmur. The end. That's what the rumor meant.
How?
Oh, I'd guess that you helped him out with your little power surge back at the palace. Pierce chucks a bone at a tree across the path with surprising force, and it snaps cleanly in two.
I'm guessing he hasn't forgotten the power surge I gave him, either. He grins, and his sparkling white teeth look positively deadly.
But regardless, the one has surely reached the rest of the Allgood family by now.
He cocks his head.
You remember watching your dear parents go up in smoke, don't you, Wistie?
The pain hits me like a jolt of electricity, and my hands ball into fists.
Of course I remember, I say through clenched teeth.
Pierce looks off into the distance, gesturing at a fake scene with his hands.
Well, imagine if you will. Your helpless parents and your weak joke of a brother being truly vaporized this time, from the Shadowland to the depths of hell.
He looks at his wrist as if checking the time.
That should be happening right about now.
That's when I hurl myself at him.
Byron panics and tries to hold me back, but I'm practically foaming at the mouth.
Wistie, you can't!
He tugs at my arms.
Don't make him stronger! Let me fight!
I cast a glance at this scrawny guy, so hopeful, so reckless, such a good friend.
No, B, we'll do it together, I tell him.
Oh, this should be good, Pierce laughs. The princess and the toad joining forces. All right then, here we go.
Pierce walks up the tree as if unbound by gravity, then pushes off and pounces toward us, cat-like. I duck, but but he manipulates the wind to raise me up and catches me in the face with a stinging backhand. It hurts, but I know it's just a fraction of what he's capable of. He's playing with us. I try to focus my power, but then he just disappears. The air ripples behind us, and I dodge out of the way as Pierce materializes, but he's already swiped a boot under Byron's leg, sending him careening to the ground.
I could kill you right now, of course, but you guys are just so much fun,
he laughs, watching Byron scramble off the floor. I snatch Byron's hand and center all of my power through our connection, a raging, deadly ball of energy circulating through our fingertips and searing into Pierce.
You still don't get how this works, do you?
Pierce hovers above us, unfazed. Tell me, how is it possible that the prophecy could revolve around someone so imbecilic? You've made the one stronger, made me stronger. Every time you use your gift, he makes air quotes, on us, we take a little more and you get weaker. You can't win. My anger fuels another astonishing burst of fuel through Byron and me, and Pierce winces. Light erupts around us, and I can feel the supernaturally powerful electrical current surging, stinging, smoking. But though I may be 10 times stronger than I've ever been, though we're zapping Pierce with a current far more potent than what almost killed him at the palace, he's right. He's stronger than we are. Still. The realization hits me right as Pierce throws one of my own currents right back in our direction. The jolt tears through us, and Byron flies backward, ripped from my grasp. He lies 20 feet from me, his body twisted at appalling angles, unmoving. With the connection lost, I'm weaker than ever, and can't fend off this monster any longer. I try to scramble away, but he grabs at my hair with one hand, wrenching me backward and off my feet. Pierce starts to get his claws around my head, and I wince, bracing for the end.
Chapter 74. My timing is perfect. I see Wisty caught in Pierce's death grip, and alarm bells explode in my head. I'm seeing red. I streak toward them from the woods and slam my whole body into Pierce with the force of 1,000 rabid soul-suckers, pounding him to the ground. He's wickedly strong, but in that moment, he's no match for my absolute need to save my sister. He's down, but probably not for long. I rush over to Wisty, crumpled on the forest floor. Relief sweeps through me as I realize my sister is alive. She's coughing and choking on the ground, and she's got a nasty welt on the side of her cheek, but she's alive. Hey, Wisty eyes me, pain written all over her face. I was wondering when you'd show up. Not that I didn't. She collapses in a coughing fit. Have the situation under control. Shh, I tell her. Take it easy. But as I rub my sister's back, I'm filled with debilitating fury. I survey the situation and see the pale, bloodied form of Byron Swain curled lifelessly against a stump. I feel the color drain from my face. No one deserves to go out like this. Don't move, I sneer, as Pierce starts to get up, iron in my voice. I'll kill you where you stand. Pierce smiles, jovial as ever behind those cold eyes. Let me get this straight. You're telling me not to move? I don't think you quite understand who's in charge of this situation here, whiz kid. His eyes flash a warning. Or who is going to be the one to die? I stand up and move away from Wisty, keeping on the balls of my feet, keeping ready. You forget that we don't have to fear you, Pierce. You can't kill us. The One wants us alive. Otherwise, he can't take our magic. You're the only vulnerable party here. I try not to look at Byron's mangled body off to the side. Pierce laughs. Ha! Wit. Naive, sensitive, idiotic Whitford Allgood. It may amuse you to learn that I've discovered a way to absorb your magic, actually. The only thing it requires is your death. The thing is, if I kill you, I'll grow even stronger. Then the only part left to do, and I'm really sad you're going to miss out on this, will be to bring your beloved sister back to the One to do the honors of the slaughter. His face changes, and I see that he's got his own agenda behind that loyal mask. That is, if I feel like it. I don't really need his assistance at all anymore, if we're being honest. Chapter 75. My hands are balled into fists, but sweat still pools in my palms as we maneuver around each other. As I step over Byron's motionless body, one arm still flung across his head protectively, the other reaching for my sister, I feel such hatred for Pierce that I'm surprised I'm not the one shooting fire. He is going to pay. I'm angry, but not stupid. I try to keep my distance from him at first, crouching low and moving slowly through the eerie red light, anticipating his first move. He's uncharacteristically silent, which puts me even more on edge. Considering our last encounter, I expected Pierce to be afraid of me, or at least to show some respect. Instead, he exudes confidence with that taunting little smile. He stays on the offensive, his long strides pushing me farther and farther into the woods, where the volume of magic is increasingly oppressive. I'm dizzy before the fight even starts. Soon the path narrows, the arms of the bone trees reaching for us like hungry demons. He's got me backed into a corner. I've beaten Pierce before, but I'll be honest, there's no way I can take his being anywhere near my skull again. If I close my eyes, I can almost still feel the white-hot pain searing through my temples. I look at this kid with his sociopathic stare, and my hands go cold, my pulse thundering in my ears. I'm confronted by my oldest enemy, fear. Then I remember my injured sister and my dead friend lying on the ground among the roaches and bones, and I lunge at the snake with a heart full of vengeance. I've got him beaten on physical strength and bulk alone, but he moves quickly and athletically, effortlessly dodging most of the punches I throw. He must have taken my last mano a mano challenge to heart, because I'm seriously paying for it now. He clearly has extensive military combat under his belt, and soon I'm dripping with sweat and breathing hard. The magic in this place is making me weaker, my punches clumsy. How stupid was I not to think about how this forest affected me the last time? Pierce catches me in the side, and I stumble off the path into a tree, coming face to face with a decaying, grinning skull that snaps its jaws. When I turn from it in horror, Pierce is already coming at me again with a jaunty, almost playful step, and I finally start to realize that the odds are not in my favor here. He seems vastly stronger now than he was before. He may be an arrogant jerk with delusions of grandeur, but when he says he doesn't need the One's help anymore, I believe him. Which means I'm a bit overmatched. I get lucky and nail him with a crushing hook to the jaw that should have downed him, but somehow he stays upright. Pierce takes advantage with a jab in my stomach, quick and vicious. I bend at the waist with a shocked groan, and by the time I suck in a wheezing breath of sour air, he's spun me into a deadly chokehold. All I can think is, you are a star athlete, Wit. How did this even happen? I'm going to die here today. And then he's going to kill my little sister before she even gets to see our parents again. I kick and flail, shoving my elbows into him, my face puffing up with the strain. But I can't seem to break free from his grasp. Now, now, hold still, Whitford. This'll only hurt for a second, he laughs cruelly. Okay, that's not really true. I'm almost unconscious, and at first I think he's going to melt my face, but that doesn't seem to be on the agenda. He's suddenly grabbing my legs, compressing them all the way up to my stomach. No, into my stomach. My organs are being crushed. Imagine being disemboweled with your own body parts, the agony vibrating from both sides, and you might be close to where I'm at right now. Looks like Pierce has been practicing a new death trick. What information can I give him to make him stop? My mind screams. But of course I don't have any, and he wouldn't anyway. And it just gets worse. I can't say what's happening, but in every single cell of my body I feel the most excruciating pain, as if he's forcing my limbs and torso inside my own skull, creating a human fool ball of me. I can see his hands, but that's all. I am beyond thought. I can only watch in horror as Pierce points a finger into the distant wilderness of the Shadowland.
Go long!
He shouts to Wisty, whom I can't see, though I can hear her pitiful begging, her useless sobs.
No, no matter. I'm sure one of the bone trees will catch him.
And then my compressed body is falling from his hands, only to connect with his steel-toed boot and a vicious dropkick that sends me sailing through the air. It's all I can do not to howl. Instead, I focus my strength on absorbing the blow, on reversing the spell, on anything but the inevitable. The world turns itself inside out and back again as I spin through the air, barreling closer and closer to one of those mammoth trunks at an astonishing speed, a car facing a head-on collision. Oh no. No, no, no. My skull smashes into a bone tree with the force of a freight train, but I don't shatter. I don't die. I bounce. As I whip through the air, my body is forced back out of the skull ball with seemingly no broken bones or permanent damage. I'm alive, but I've never been more freaking ticked off in my life. I hurl myself forward, rage distorting my features and my vision. I have time to see only the astonished look on Pierce's stupid mug before I plow into his chest, clawing and thrashing at 80 miles an hour. Safe to say, he's down for the count.
Chapter 76. We should have checked, I mumble to my brother. We should have made sure we finished the job. Whit and I are carrying the unconscious, wounded, but decidedly not dead, Byron Swain across the difficult terrain, and with every step I think I can hear Pierce trailing us. Drop it, Wist. I told you, he's done. Let's just focus on getting Byron to the river. We're almost there anyway. We are? My brother nods, hiking Byron up, and my mind whirs. The only thing in my line of vision is the steep hill we're trudging up, shadows snaking together in the dry grass. Behind us, the dark presence of the bone forest looms. But what's beyond the hill? I quicken my pace, struggling against Byron's weight to climb higher, faster. I'm lightheaded. I didn't believe we'd really get here, that I'd ever see my parents again. I know that Whit has already seen them, but I shut out the thought anyway. If I let myself believe in the possibility and it turns out to be a mirage, like every other time we've seen them, I think it will destroy me. I bite my lip. No, Wisty, it's not real. Not yet. But I find I'm holding my breath anyway. And when we crest the hill, the valley stretching out beneath us, hope blossoms around my heart. I can see the water snaking below, a thick gray line dividing here and everything after. And there, next to the river, like in every dream I've had for months, are my parents. Masses of people surround them, crowds upon crowds walking with no place to go. Stymied by a raised drawbridge cutting them off from the river, milling about death's waiting room. But there's no mistaking my parents, standing hand in hand, slightly apart from the rest, with heads raised toward the hilltop, waiting for me. The air is so loaded with magic here, I can barely breathe, but I leave Byron with Whit and sprint down to them at full speed, tripping over my feet. My heart is racing so fast it's squeezing my chest. Not real, not real, not real, I whisper to myself just in case. But I crash into my fragile-looking father, nearly knocking us both to the ground. And he is real. This is really happening. Hey, firecracker, my dad says, his eyes shining.
and I totally lose it. I grab numbly from my mom's papery hand and try to say something to her. I love you, I missed you, anything. But the sobs choke out my words, and I'm hyperventilating.
Shh, sweetheart, Mom whispers, taking my face in her hands and wiping away the tears with her thumbs.
But she's starting to weep herself as she smooths my matted hair and looks me over, clasping a hand over her mouth. For the first time in a long while, I'm aware of all the bruises on my pale skin, the cuts that haven't yet healed, and the disgusting state of my clothes. She takes me in her arms, rocking me.
My baby, what happened to you? Her voice quivers.
It's okay, Mom. I'm okay, I say, but it's not that convincing since I'm still crying and still racked with confusion. I pull away from her.
Why would you tell us not to come for you?
I look at both my parents. They don't answer, but now that I've asked and now that I'm here, it already doesn't matter. I bury my face in Dad's arms and grip Mom's waist. Now I'm never, ever letting them go again.
Can I join the happy reunion? Whit says, looking at all of our puffy eyes and sad faces. I laugh weakly, but hold out an arm to my brother. He squeezes my hand and enters the circle, ducking his head to hide his emotion. Tears are streaming freely down my dad's gaunt cheeks. The four of us stay like that, rocking and hugging, until I feel my mom shiver and I notice the goosebumps erupting on my own arms. A cool wind is picking up, and fast.
Oh no,
a familiar voice moans from nearby.
Celia! It's always so good to see her, and I want to embrace her, but the look on her face makes me stop.
What?
I start to ask, but then I understand. As the temperature plummets, my teeth start to chatter, and I feel a terrible coldness clutching at me, a deeper cold than I've ever felt in the Shadowland before. It's the one.
Chapter 77. The wind whips my red hair into my face, and he walks calmly through the valley, his eyes clear and his resolve evident. He seems to glide toward us, the air bending around him, warping as if heat is blowing through it. Even the red sky darkens in response to his unwelcome presence. Despite the wind, the river stops, the water still as ice. Everything is wrong. The thousands of spirits fall silent as the one who is the one passes, and they step back, eyes lowered in reverence or fear. There is no difference anymore. He moves through the crowd with deliberate slowness, never taking his gaze from my face. I lean closer to my family, clutching my mom's delicate arm. My dad stands in front of me, jaw set, and my brother squeezes my shoulder. Celia stands resolutely by his side, her half-light flickering. We are united, or at least that's how we look. But the one keeps right on coming, and we all know he's coming for me.
So we meet again, all goods, the one says cordially, stopping in front of us on the wet gravel. He's alone.
You found the river of forever. Well, that's fortunate. I couldn't have planned it any better myself.
No one says anything for a moment, and the air feels so heavy I think I'm choking. My parents seem small by my side in the shadow of his towering height. I can't let him hurt them again. Not when it's me he's come for.
Maybe you didn't plan it.
Maybe we did, I answer, stepping out from behind my father. My stomach feels like I've been eating rocks.
Wit's fists are balled up defensively. What do you want? He spits at the one, and I shake my head.
Wit, don't. This is not just Pierce we're dealing with.
The one shakes his head as if he's disappointed.
You know what I want. I want the girl with the flaming red hair.
I want her fire. I want her energy. I want her gift.
Never. I shake my head bitterly, my temper already making my body heat up. You'll have to kill me first.
I realize that might be a very real possibility in this situation.
I don't think you've heard me correctly, child. The time has come. With the four elements under my power, earth, wind, water, and finally, at last, sweet fire, I will be eternal, a god.
I can't help but remember what Mrs. Highsmith said to us back in her apartment. Our mission is to guarantee that the one can never play God. Then I think of Pearl's small voice. Maybe she's right. Maybe he's already there.
And once I have that last little requirement...